The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
The fate of those on the Titan submersible gripped the world 3 years ago when five people who went to see the wreckage of the Titanic lost contact with their support crew. The eyes of the world were on the search as the hours and the days ticked by, until it was confirmed that the vessel had imploded 500 metres above the wreckage. Now, Christine Dawood's husband and her son Suleiman and Shahzada died on the Titan, and she found herself at sea as the search continued, waiting for days and watching the horizon for the submersible to surface. Christine has written a book about her experience of that time, and she joins me now. Christine, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is lovely to speak to you, but as I describe what happened to you, you have an extraordinary tale to tell. My deepest sympathies to you on your loss. And my first question to you is, why did you decide that now was the right time for you to tell this story?
Because there are a couple of reasons. One reason was because I think I'm progressing in my grief journey. And it's been almost 3 years now, so I'm in a different place. So it felt right to give voice to my two men and give the public a kind of a glimpse into the people who they were, not just being a headline. And I think the second main reason was because I'm now embarking on a different journey. I'm opening up a healing center for trauma and loss here in the UK. And I felt that the book would be a part of that because I am doing a next step. I'm helping people. And before I can do that, I wanted to express what I've been through.
And Christine, you trained in psychology, didn't you?
I'm an occupational psychologist. So yes, through that, but mainly because I was very blessed on having a lot of people supporting me, family, friends, as well as professionals. And I know that not everybody has such a strong support network. And I just want to be able to, for people who need help, who go through loss, who experience trauma, to go somewhere and experience a safe haven and get help.
Mm-hmm. Can we go back then to the decision that your family made to pursue the dream to see the wreckage of the Titanic? What led up to that decision?
Fascination, really. And that it was possible. That was basically the main thing, that it was even possible.
Mm-hmm. And tell me who in your family was so excited about the Titanic. I know so many of us have a deep fascination with the Titanic, but this went beyond any sort of a passing interest, didn't it?
Well, it was just when I saw the ad on Instagram, then it was just, okay, this is something I never thought possible, and therefore it became interesting. So, and while the Titanic, Shahzada has one of his favorite movies used to be the black and white Titanic movie, like the first one that came out like ages ago. And we went together on the exhibition, and it was just something we enjoyed talking about as a family.
Mm-hmm. And then how did that go from a passing interest to the decision then that this would become a family adventure?
Because our travel agents then found Ocean Gate, and they found that it is a real dive, and that we can really do it. And so then once we met the people, and then it just became a holiday because we knew that this is going to be our holiday for this year.
And you felt comfortable about the trip at the time. Did you have any concerns about it?
Not really, because there has never been a civilian submersible fatal accident.
Mm-hmm. But I know that when you got on the vessel that was to take you to the Titan, or take your men to the Titan, it wasn't the most comfortable vessel. And you joke about that in a way, you know, you say that you like your comforts, so many of us do. It wasn't a comfortable vessel, was it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. Well, I almost felt like being back as like a student in bunk beds and youth hostels. It felt that way. Yes. Mm-hmm. Rustic, practical, no real luxury.
And then, so what was it like when your husband and your son left to go on the submersible? Did you still feel comfortable at that point as they walked away from you?
A bit nervous, but yeah, I trusted the vessel. I trusted the system.
And then your job was to wait on this vessel, which wasn't very comfortable, for them to return. How long was their trip meant to be?
Well, a total from 6 to 8 hours, mm-hmm. About 2 hours to dive down, 2 hours to roam around, and then another 2 to 3 hours coming back up.
And so you were told then, or you overheard, that they had lost contact above sea with the submersible. Is that right?
Yes. Just that they lost contact. Mm-hmm. That really was it. And that they are just waiting to hear from them again, and also just waiting for them to come back up.
So you clearly at the beginning of this, you wouldn't have known how serious this was.
No, we didn't.
Mm-hmm. So take us through then. I mean, the book is called 96 Hours. So all of that time you spent on this vessel waiting for news, did you know that the whole world was very quickly talking about the Titan?
Yes and no. I switched everything off. I switched off all my social media. I switched off all my notifications. And I also didn't go on any news websites. But obviously, I was in touch with my family and friends. So I knew the gist of it.
Mm-hmm. Were there other people from the families of the other people on the Titan? Were they there with
No.
you? No, just you.
No. Well, Wendy was there, Stockton's wife, uh-huh. which obviously was part of Oceangate.
This is Stockton Rush, who ran
Yes.
Oceangate. And you met Stockton before this excursion and Wendy, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel about him during that meeting?
Well, like I write in the book, he, I guess from a British or European point of view, he was typical American, a little bit cocky, a little bit arrogant, thinking that the world belongs to them. But otherwise, a regular human being.
Mm-hmm. And he did mention in that meeting, didn't he, that at times it had happened that contact had been lost between the Titan and the vessel, in this case, the Polar Prince. He did mention that. And you noticed his wife's physical reaction when he told that story.
Because in that moment, I took it more like that they didn't really lose contact, but that he just forgot to message them, because they then they got so engrossed in, you know, looking around the Titanic that he just didn't want to, you know, waste time with typing. That's how I interpreted.
Mm-hmm. So take us back then to the hours after contact was lost. Was the crew keeping you informed as to what was or wasn't happening?
Yeah. They, whatever message came in, I went up to the bridge. I, you know, went up and down. I talked to them. And at that time, it didn't feel like they're hiding anything. And they told me, like, this message from the Coast Guard came in and this message came in. And so, yeah, I was definitely informed.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel panicked at that in the early hours, or were you calm? Can you remember?
Nervous, very nervous.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't panic, but I had like a kind of a funny feeling in my, not a funny, like a weird feeling in my stomach. So, yeah.
And when were you aware that they were not going to be found and that this tragedy had happened?
By the time the 6,000 meter ROV went into the water and we still hadn't found them, like, I think after the first couple of breakdowns of the smaller ROVs and they just wouldn't find anything, I think then, yeah, we started to know, okay, this is not going well.
Mm-hmm. And I was struck by something that was said to you by a member of the Canadian Coast Guard, because we can always, when things happen to our families, we can start blaming ourselves or start looking back on things we should or we shouldn't have done. Can you remember what that person said to you about that?
That hindsight bias is a very dangerous thing, that looking back with the knowledge you have now to judge yourself, that you judge your past self with the knowledge you have now, is not helpful mm-hmm. for the grieving process.
Which, of course, is really sensible, you know, and makes logical sense, but it's really difficult, isn't it, to be sensible in those moments?
And that's why I really appreciated that, because I was like, you know, at that point, I was still frozen, like, you know, my body was just, you know, just going through the motions. I wasn't, you know, I couldn't feel anything. I was just like completely under shock. So when she said that, I just looked at her and I didn't even fully comprehend until much later her profound advice, really, because that's what it is. The could have, would have, what ifs, that's exactly what would come. And she basically told me, don't get caught in that trap of the what ifs because of the knowledge you have now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point you were supposed to be in the submersible, isn't that right?
Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm. And what happened to change that?
Suleiman wanted to have this time with his father because he was supposed to go into the family business with his dad, and he wanted to create memories that have nothing to do with business. And he really enjoyed going on to trips with his father.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, it made sense to do that. And coming to the end of that awful experience on the Polar Prince then, when you realised what had happened, that your son and your husband were gone, what happened next? How quickly then did you leave the Polar Prince, and where did you go afterwards?
So we, the Coast Guard, found the debris on the 22nd of June. And so we had to wait for another 2 days to be able to get on land, because it's just, the distances are so vast. It took us 2 days to get back to Newfoundland and to St. John's. So, yeah, 2 days. And it was quite, yeah, it was awful 2 days, because you're just, all you want is being off that ship, off that, you know, you feel trapped. But on the other hand, it's kind of a safe bubble too, because at that point, the media still wasn't able to get to us. No other people could get to us, nothing. So we were like also in a kind of a safety bubble. It's like this controversy, right? I mean, it's two facts can be true at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a way it was, I couldn't get off it fast enough. And yet I didn't want to get off at all, because once I get off, I need to acknowledge the fact that they are gone. So as long as I was on that ship, you know, I could trick myself into thinking that this is all not true.
Mm-hmm. So then when you got off, and there was such huge media interest in what happened, did you become hyper aware of that when you stepped onto dry land? Was it in your face, or were you protected from it in any way?
Both, really. Like we came into the harbor and there were so many photographers, and, you know, I just opened the curtains of the cabin just a tiny little bit, but it was just like overwhelming how many people would stand there. And on the other hand, I was also protected from the family and from the Coast Guard. They were very supportive. They were made sure that we were you know, guided into the building of the Ghost Guard and, you know, into a secure building. And from there, they would like take us to the hotel and they made sure that we are safe.
Mm-hmm. And you had to bring your family's belongings from the Polar Prince off that day. Was that your job, that you had to get their things?
So thankfully, to be honest, I don't even know who actually brought the things then, but we could leave the backpacks at the ship and they would be then delivered to our hotel.
Mm-hmm. So where did you go then afterwards? Because I'm still left with that sense of you for the 2 days coming back into dry land, that awful journey. I can imagine feeling that I need to do something, even though there is nothing you can do to change what has happened. What did you do afterwards? Where did you take your grief? How did you deal with it?
The first few days and weeks after, it was just one big reaction to stuff. Things needed to be done. Media inquiries needed to be read. And there was just like, I felt like all I do is reacting to something. There was like zero proactive measures, nothing. I was just like trying to catch up with whatever was flooding in and going through the motions, going through the condolences. And it was a time of numbness. It was a time of nothingness, really. I mean, there was just, everything was empty because that loss was just, had just ripped everything out at that point. And I felt like there was nothing left.
And how do you describe your life now?
I think I'm in the process of finding my feet again and finding a kind of a new identity from a former wife of and mother of. I'm finding slowly a new identity, and also I'm finding new purpose with the healing center. And I think that's a very healthy way for me to move forward, that I'm finding a new purpose by helping others and by, you know, it gets me up in the morning again. Mm-hmm. Like I'm finally at a stage where when I wake up, I'm actually like looking forward to get up to get things done so that, you know, the project is realizing and not just lying in bed and dreading another day.
Well, that in itself is an extraordinary achievement, you know, to get to that point. And I know there will be people listening in the throes of grief who wonder, will they ever reach that point? I think there's great hope in hearing it from you, Christine. So when you mention your healing centre, what is your ambition with that project?
It will be a residential healing centre, like with therapists, but a holistic kind of healing, where we also will, you know, offer things like yoga, acupuncture and other things, evidence-based practice, so that we can help people with modern as well as traditional medicine, just to be able to move forward with their grief, with their trauma. I just want people to be able to get there, arrive there, breathe out and heal. Mm-hmm. That's all I want.
Well, I think it is a very worthwhile ambition, and I hope that it works out, and we look forward to seeing it being realised. Christine, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to us. The book is called 96 Hours, A Wife and Mother's Desperate Search for the Lost Titan Sub. Christine, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.